This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Today's host is Senior Editor Chris Sheridan.
Joining us on the show today is Chris Poplava, the Chief Investment Officer at Financial Sense Wealth Management. Chris, let's talk about what you're looking at in terms of this withdrawing tide from the market.
Sure. That tide comes from Warren Buffett, who is very witty. The full quote is, "Only when the tide goes out do you see who's been swimming naked." And what he means by that is, you know, when the tide of liquidity is there, when the water level is high, everyone looks fine above the surface. And you can't tell who's been swimming naked. And so when the tide goes out, you can see, okay, who has their clothes on, who doesn't. In terms of investing, that means who is leveraged, who's got a healthy balance sheet, and who doesn't. You know, is more money and credit coming into the economies and financial markets, or is that tide of credit beginning to recede? And when it recedes, you have problems. Another way to look at that is in terms of growth. So when growth accelerates, think of the tide coming in and rising. You know, everything looks fine. And then when growth slows down, think of that as the tide going out. And you kind of see, okay, who was just barely making it when times were good? You see, you know, that they come into stress when times are a little bit tougher. And there's two dynamics that I believe are going to lead to our third global slowdown. When I'm talking about a growth slowdown, I'm talking about decelerating growth, not negative growth. So think of growing at 5%. Now you're growing at 4%, then 3%, and then 2%. Still positive, but you're decelerating from the peak. And I believe we are about to move into, if not already moving into, our third slowdown, which will have significant implications going forward.
In your article, you do indicate that there is some research that seems to suggest that emerging markets and the high yield market are especially vulnerable. These are the areas that we tend to see vulnerabilities exposed first, right? So give us an idea of some of the things that you're looking at.
That is a potential maybe casualty in this next downturn is the junk bond market. But one of the things I took a look at recently, not in my recent article, but just what I was doing some research this week, is we have seen a tremendous amount of money flowing out of the credit markets in terms of the ETFs. To give you an example, one of the biggest investment grade corporate bond ETFs is the iShares iBoxx Investment Grade, symbols LQD. Year to date, they have lost 13% of their total assets since the beginning of the year. The iShares junk bond ETF, HYG, it has lost nearly 20% of its assets, has flown out of the fund this year. And the Spider Bloomberg Barclays High Yield ticker, JNK, that junk bond ETF has lost 23% of its assets. So to me, that could be a warning that one of the people that might feel this in the next growth slowdown is the junk bond market. And that makes sense because this time around, we've had a pretty big surge in interest rates. So funding your debt becomes more expensive and more difficult. So if you're just barely cutting it when interest rates are at 2%, it's going to be that much more difficult when interest rates move up to 3% on the long-term treasury market. So that is a potential culprit that might come to the surface as swimming naked.
Let's camp on the idea of an economic slowdown ahead, because that's something you touched on. You think that we're going to enter another growth slowdown, and we have seen two already, right? So you can look at the Conference Board's leading economic index. You have a chart of that. You show that we have seen two growth slowdowns that didn't end up leading to an outright contraction, right? But it does appear, given two really important indicators that you have in your piece called anticipatory leading indicators, that we should expect to see the LEI and then also just general economic growth to decelerate from current levels. So let's talk about some of that data that you're looking at.
Sure. Some of the indicators that I look at that do a pretty good job of predicting weaker growth is the U.S. Risk Aversion Index. When you advance that by several months, that tends to lead the Conference Board's LEI growth rate. It tends to lead the year-over-year rate of change in the stock market, looking using the S&P 500. Another thing I look at is the U.S. Yield Curve Momentum Index. That does a really good job of looking at tightening ahead, which would weigh on growth. These things are telling me that we're going to be moving into weaker periods ahead. And I think we're already starting to see that, not just here in the U.S., but even abroad. If you look at the manufacturing sector in Europe, they've had three straight monthly readings of lower manufacturing PMI surveys. ones I really like looking at the U.S. is the Chicago Fed National Activity Index. That looks at 85 monthly indicators, so it's a very broad look at the national economy. They have a diffusion index, so, you know, what percentage of those 85 are rising, what percentage are falling. And back in beginning of 2016, during that slowdown, I think it was a net 30% of those 85 had negative readings. So that was a very low level. And looking at the present, it went all the way up to about 30% had a net positive for the diffusion index. That's been starting to roll over the last 2 months here. We've seen a high in there, and we've seen some regional Fed surveys come in weaker than expected. And I think we're going to continue to see more of this.
I do want to note, for any of you listening, if you want to see these charts and the leading relationship that they have over the conference boards, LEI, or even the S&P 500, you can look at those charts. We'll have a link where this interview is located on our website, so you can see them for yourself. Chris, is there anything else that you're looking at that seems to be suggesting that we might be looking at a real slowdown ahead?
Sure. You know, there's several things. One of them that I think kind of indicates that the top may already be in economically is the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index. And what that is measuring is a percentage of economic releases that surprise to the upside versus surprising to the downside. And that recently peaked. I think the peak was in late January, early February. And we've come down from there. There's a clear top in place in the amount that have been surprising to the upside. And I think that's, again, showing early signs that we may have a slowdown ahead of us. Other things that I'm looking at that suggest that we are moving into a slowdown, if you look at the money supply growth here in the U.S., it is clearly decelerating. Looking at M2 money supply growth rates year over year, we're currently at 4%. And that is a dramatic shift from where we were at the high in 2016 at nearly 8%. And where we are at 4%, that is the lowest level seen since 2010. So we've seen a pretty dramatic drop in the growth rate for money supply here in the U.S., and it's not just the U.S. If you look at Chinese M2 money supply growth, we are at the lowest level seen in more than a decade. Currently, Chinese credit growth is at 8.2% year-over-year for M2 money supply. That compares to a high in 2010 of 30% annual growth. Even as little as 2016, looking back that far, we were double digits. We were about 14% year over year. So you look at the U.S., you look at China, you look at the Eurozone, we are seeing a shift in money supply growth all over the world. And I think, again, that is a figure of the amount of liquidity being drained from the system. Europe right now, their M1 money supply growth rate is at 8.2. That is coming off a high of seeing double digits in early 2016 of nearly 12%. So Europe isn't decelerating as fast as the U.S. and China, but they're following suit. So we have the world's largest economy, the U.S. We have the world's second largest economy, the European and or China, depending on how wide you look at the European Union. The top three regions, economic regions of the world, are showing some of the lowest growth rates in money supply of the entire expansion. I would have to believe that would have some impact on risk assets and growth ahead.
Now, Chris, I want to tie in something that you discussed with us last time, too, and that's this theme of rising inflation, because, you know, this ties into what we're talking about with central banks, of course. And one of the really interesting charts that you pointed out is how the ISM manufacturing PMI, it leads inflation by 2 years. So essentially, it's suggesting that we should continue to see inflation pick up throughout this year and even into 2019. So if that's the case, and we continue to see inflationary pressures. I know there's a number of other charts and data out there showing that wage inflation is also likely to continue picking up. If that's the case, then central banks, I mean, they're going to have to raise interest rates, right? They're going to have to continue on this path. And it seems all the signs are pointing in that direction. So again, just underscoring the importance of what we're seeing here with all of these major regions, China, U.S., and Eurozone together, and some of the forces at work. How do you take this and put it into, you know, what you see with seasonality? Because I know that, you know, we don't follow seasonality here religiously. You know, it's not like a timing tool where, you know, once May hits, which is going to be next week now, you know, once May hits, you sell and you buy back in November. Right, sell in May and go away. But your recent article, you know, you seem to suggest that when you have a lot of these things coming together, seasonality plays a much more important role, doesn't it?
It does. Oftentimes, you know, one of the famous quotes on Wall Street is sell in May and go away. And what that's referring to is that the middle 6 months of the year from May through October tend to be some of the weakest months in terms of stock returns. And the subsequent six-month period from November through April tends to have some of the strongest returns. And that is typically the case, but I think what is more of an impact on how the market does during those time periods is what growth is like. So if you look at the growth upturn we had in 2016, if you look at that seasonal period in the middle part of the year, the market did far better than where it did when we had a growth slowdown in 2014 and 15. And so what we're looking at is a potential growth slowdown that I think may cause the normal weak period that we see, the sell in May and go away, to be a little bit more pronounced than where, say, it was in 2017 or 16. So that is a concern. And then the other concern that we have to worry about seasonality-wise is that this is a midterm election year. When you look back at history, some of the weakest years we're seeing during midterm election years, going back to 1950, post-World War II period, the average intra-year max drawdown in the S&P 500 was nearly 17%. I do want to note, though, that on average, the market still finished positive for the year, but it was a very volatile period, and much of the positive return came in those final months of the year. It's that middle part of the year where the market really took a dive, and it was only as you near the midterm election in November where you might have a better insight into who's going to win that the market starts to firm up and move higher.
You know, it's interesting too, Chris, because you think about what's really driving headlines right now. I mean, there's a number of things that we can look at, whether or not it's increasing talks about trade relations between U.S., China, and other countries, you know, trade wars. There's plenty of stuff that Trump is tweeting on a regular basis, of course. But, you know, earnings is really gaining a lot of attention right now. And earnings have been fairly strong. I mean, it seems like a lot of the numbers have been beating. But again, earnings are lagging. I mean, we're looking at last quarter now at this point, right? So the information that you're discussing, this is forward looking, right? This is stuff that where you have indicators that lead many of the things that you'll see in the headlines probably a year from now, maybe even 6 months from now. So this is looking through the front windshield, so to speak. These are leading economic indicators that you watch at Financial Sense Wealth Management. So putting all this together, you know, when we think about midterm elections and the amount of volatility we typically see, as you mentioned, you know, with seasonality probably playing a more important role, what is it that you are doing with clients at Financial Sense Wealth Management?
Well, I believe, you know, we're going to head into a slowdown here, and that means typically higher volatility and weaker returns. So the big focus that we've had for clients is risk management, you know, kind of having lines in the sand for investments that we don't want to fall below a certain level, shifting more towards cash and short-term bonds. Interest rates on the short end have really moved up dramatically over the past year. You can now get nearly 2%, or you can get 2%, on a six-month T-bill. So over the last 9 years, cash has been trash. You've seen cash or yields basically at zero, and now they are at or exceeding 2%. So, you know, it used to be the big acronym that Wall Street loved was TINA. There is no alternative, meaning everything was a horrible investment outside of stocks and decent dividend yields. And I can't say there is an alternative now. And cash is not trash. I mean, if with yields of 2%, that's a far cry where they used to be over a decade ago or so. But they're still significantly higher than what we've seen during the cycle. So, you know, sometimes it's, you know, hide to live another day and, you know, sit in cash and preserve your capital. That way you can take advantage of opportunities that arise during a downturn.
Okay, so just to repeat, I mean, you're getting more defensive, you're raising some cash, you're trimming risk around the edges, and as you write in your piece, you know, you're essentially buying short-term U.S. Treasury bills that are getting 2% annual yields. So taking advantage of the increase in interest rates, and this has been something we've been discussing on our show for some time, you know, with the strategy of buying floating rate bonds. When interest rates are going up, of course, you know, you benefit from that. So these are some of the strategy things that we've been discussing on our show, and that, you know, obviously you are implementing at Financial Sense Wealth Management. Chris, before we go, I want to ask you about some of the indicators that you've developed, because from my understanding, you've basically made a new LEI model. It used to be that many times on the show, we would discuss the individual leading economic indicators that you can look at. But tell us how you've aggregated that now into one single composite and the message that that's giving currently.
Sure. You know, not all leading economic indicators are treated equal. You know, just to give an example of that, looking at the regional Fed surveys, there's certain districts that tend to have more of an impact to the economy than others. And so what I've done is look at various leading economic indicators, whether it be economic data, credit market data, and compile them into one essentially composite, and, you know, suggesting or talking about the potential that we already are in a slowdown. Our proprietary LEI, it has peaked. The peak was seen in early 2017. We kind of flatlined at a high growth level, but we've since been decelerating the last 3 months. And now, looking in hindsight over the last 3 to 6 months, we can clearly see a top formation. And our indicator correctly called the 2010 through 2012 downturn, as well as the 2014 through 16 downturn. So that is something that will be helpful to kind of see, do we have an upturn after this downturn? Or, for the first time ever, do we see negative growth? And would suggest a recession, not just a temporary slowdown. So that'll be something very important to watch ahead.
Yeah, and when it comes to risk management and how heavily exposed you should be to the market, you know, I know that we've had you on the show in the past to discuss Barry Bannister's outlook and some of your own thoughts, but as it stands currently, it looks like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but 2019 is a very likely time period that we could start to see economic growth move from this slowdown or deceleration to an outright contraction, right? And which, if that's the case, and we do see the indicators continue to decelerate and move south, you want to continue to lighten up. You want to continue becoming more defensive. So is that essentially the kind of roadmap that you see at this point?
I do. You know, that's what my gut tells me, but my indicators don't look out that far. I think the farther you look out, you know, the murkier the picture becomes. So what I can say with, you know, fairly high confidence is that we are likely to see a slowdown through the remainder of this year. The question will be is, you know, a few months from now, and we shift our leading economic indicators forward, you know, what's that suggesting for growth? Do we keep heading south and go into negative territory? I'll be looking at market data in terms of the stock market and economically speaking. Are we seeing weakening breath in terms of economic data across the 50 states? Are we seeing weakening breath in terms of the stock market? Are fewer and fewer stocks participating in the bull market? I would tend to suggest a weak market that may be in the process of turning lower. So these will be things I'll be watching. And we are certainly seeing a lot of late cycle dynamics. Near the end of a business cycle, you tend to see wage inflation really begin to pick up. And that's because the unemployment rate is usually at the lowest during the end of the expansion. And currently, I think we're at 4.1 on the U.S. unemployment rate. And if we went below 3.8, which is not too far away from where we are now, that would be the lowest unemployment rate seen since World War II. So that kind of tells you how, you know, far we've come and how tight labor markets are. And it's one of the top concerns voiced by small businesses. And just think of this from a logical standpoint. When the unemployment rate gets this low, we have millions and millions of jobs open right now, but we have a problem of filling them with the right, you know, skilled labor. And so if small businesses, if corporations cannot find qualified people for the jobs they have, just think of what that's going to do for the job growth in this country. You know, we're going to be decelerating from 250,000 jobs created each month down to 150,000, down to 100,000, and then down to 50,000. And when you start getting to growth rates that low, that's when you got to worry about the next downturn. And I think we will see from here on out a continued deceleration or decelerating trend in employment growth. So that also will weigh on the economy.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you for coming onto our show and running through your recent piece. We are about to see who's swimming naked. Once again, this is the second quarter outlook that you just wrote for our website and for clients. We have a link out to it where this interview is located on Financial Sense. So if any of you want to read it, I would certainly encourage you to do so. Lots of great charts and data. Again, many of these are leading indicators that you're showing that are looking forward 6 to 12 months. So looking past the headlines of today. With that said, Chris, would you mind telling our listeners a little bit more about Financial Sense Wealth Management and the way that they could get in contact with you?
Sure. We provide comprehensive financial services, wealth management, as well as financial planning. And they can contact our firm and myself. My email is chris.paplava@financialsense.com, or they can give us a call at 888-486-3939.
Chris, it was a pleasure speaking with you on our show again. We look forward to speaking with you in the months ahead.
Thanks for having me.
So as we discussed towards the end there, as Chris mentioned, his LEI composite that he's developed has certainly peaked, and that agrees with a lot of the other indicators that we discussed today. The LEI composite, in addition to a number of other indicators that we have, mainly four of them that we use to inform our outlook on the market, they are our recession model. And currently, that is not spiking, showing that we're not looking at any imminent risks of recession. Also, a financial stress composite that we have, the LEI composite, again, that was mentioned, and a Fed risk neutral index. So that essentially measures the Fed funds rate relative to economic growth rates. Because, you know, when we're discussing on the show many, many times about the Fed or central banks breaking the market, one thing you have to keep in mind is, are they raising rates faster than the pace at which economic growth is declining? So you can quantitatively measure that. Chris has created an index that does that. And so currently it is showing that the Fed is still relatively loose compared to where the economy is performing. If we start to see that turn around and spike, I'll have a link actually out to that chart where this interview is located if you want to take a look. But if we start to see that spike above a certain threshold, that has identified prior recessions. That is when the central banks and the Fed in particular are at the point of breaking the market and the economy. So these four different indicators that I just went through, we're going to provide periodic updates on these through webinars on our website so you can see visually for yourself a lot of the data and how we use them for risk management again. So those are going to be available on our website in the months ahead. And we're also going to make that information available primarily to FS Insider subscribers on a periodic basis. So for any of you that want to get your hands on that research to follow along with many of the proprietary indicators that we use at our own firm internally, certainly take advantage of that. I would encourage you to do so because it is very helpful. Again, we try to look at leading economic indicators, and we also try to make sure that we can measure quantitatively a lot of the relationships that we're discussing to remove that subjective component from determining whether or not you should be scaling in or scaling out of the market. So if you would like to subscribe, it's a very reasonable and cheap price compared to many of our peers. A monthly subscription is $18 a month, or the yearly subscription is $150 a year. We also have a 30-day free trial. All of that is available on our website, financialsense.com. You can click the banner, or you can also email me at cris@financialsense.com. If you would like more information, I'll be happy to assist any of you further.
Thank you, Chris Paplava, Chris Sheridan, and Jim, we are looking forward to the next week's program. What are we going to do?
Well, let me see. What's coming up? We're more than halfway through the earnings season, and the market is still having some difficulty, John, as we talked earlier about interest rates rising above 3%, and some of our strategists think that we could be hitting a possibility of even 3.5% or 4%. The Fed is going to be meeting in the month of May, the first part of the month. There's not any expectation of any interest rate increases, but the markets will be scanning for reinforcement. It's widely anticipated, over 80% probability, the Fed will raise interest rates for the second time this year in June. So all of that coming up, it'll be interesting because we're seeing the yield on the two-year rise. And one of the real problems that the market and even the Fed was noticing, the yield curve was beginning to flatten as short-term rates rose and long-term rates were not. Well, this week we got a rise in long-term rates with the 10-year note crossing 3, and we're almost at 3.2% on the 30-year bond. So a lot of stuff to talk about, and of course we're going to be following those LAIs. The first quarter was rather slow. Will that tax stimulus and all that tax money stimulate the economy? Everyone's looking for a pickup in GDP in the second quarter. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense News Hour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.